Okay, so I've met many of you, but not everyone in this room, so I'm Devorah's watch hour. You probably know this is Yeshivat Hadar, and it's nice to see people who I met for the first time at the Alumni Shabbaton. Very nice to see people I see almost every morning, and nice to see new faces, too. I'm excited about what we have to do tonight, because we have a very interesting series of somewhat vituperative letters that pass between, that's a good word, yeah, you'll see. Let's just say that some of the medieval scholars did not hold back when they disagreed, and we are going to have an exchange of letters in a little bit between Rabbeinu Tam, famous grandson of Rashi, wearer of a different pair of tefillin, among other things, and Rabbeinu Meshulam, who was his contemporary from the city of Lunel in Provence. People in France and Lunel, there were slightly different traditions. And that's one of the things that's coming up. But in order to get there, I want to talk a little bit about what I'm hoping to do tonight and just in general what I'm trying to do over these, where there's a follow-up next weekend, next Tuesday. So I find myself thinking a lot about issues of authority. Probably somewhat shocking. I have a feeling I'm not the only one in this room who does. Issues of creativity. When the rabbis create something, what allows them to do that? What kinds of boundaries are there to there? Where does the permission to do that come from? Particularly since we have some fairly strong indications in the Torah that would indicate that this is dangerous territory. So, for example, we are told, lo tosifu v'lo tigru mimenu, right? Do not add and do not subtract from God's commandments. If that's the case, it would seem that we have a little bit of a problem because the rabbis came along and did a whole lot of things. But I think one of the first things we could distinguish are between gezerot, or various rabbinic enactments that were there to kind of bound or add to pre-existing mitzvot. And one of the things I want to talk about this evening, and we'll talk about also next week, which is rituals or... there are more sheets up here, so feel free. No, I'm leaving them here with you, Beth. And occasions when the rabbis actually create something that seems to be completely brand new, like a new ritual, okay? And that's, I think, something particularly interesting to look at. And I wanted to use a test case tonight, and I wanted to look at the case of Shabbat candles. Because while Shabbat candles may seem to be something we do a whole lot, maybe seems to be a little bit ordinary, the truth of the matter is that there was a lot of halachic creativity that went into the creation of this ritual. Also, for those of you who... might not know, during the first semester here at Yeshiva Hadar, we learned the 10th chapter of Psachim, which meant we spent a lot of time talking about Kiddush and Havdalah. And I thought it was time that we gave Shabbat candles their due as well. Okay, so in terms of Shabbat candles, I want to talk a little bit about what we see in the Mishnah and the Gemara and compare that to what, in fact, we do now and how we understand the lighting of Shabbat candles now. So if you daven in a Nusach Ashkenaz shul or many of the Nusach Ashkenaz shuls, Friday night after Kabbalat Shabbat, before Ma'ariv, people kind of recite quickly through the second chapter of Mishnah Shabbat, the Perek of Bamim Madlikin. Okay? And if you look at the contents of the chapter of Bamim Madlikin, there is a rather lengthy and somewhat complex discussion about the types of oils, the types of wicks, the types of lamps that you may or may not use to light candles. Pretty much nowhere in this chapter is there any explanation of what these lights, candles, wicks, lamps are for. There is certainly no indication that there seems to be some sort of ritual purpose to the lighting of these candles and wicks. And yet, we mark this particular occasion as a mitzvah. In what way do we do so? So how do we know that the lighting of Shabbat candles is a mitzvah? Which would you point to? Okay, lots of hands. Yeah, we say a bracha. We say a birkat mitzvah, asher kedushan tzotav tzivanu lehadlit ner shel Shabbat. Okay, so that's certainly one very strong indicator that it is a mitzvah. Any others? We don't blow out candles, but that's probably because of melacha. Yeah, Lily?
In the typical list of women's mitzvah, it's given as one of those three.
Okay, good. And we'll take a look at a Mishnah, right? Talk about whether those are mitzvot. But yes, it does appear on that infamous or famous trio. Any other indication that there might be some sort of ritual status to the lighting of these candles? Yeah? Okay. Legislative time. Okay. Something that happens for many people when the candles are lit. It's the moment that ushers in Shabbat, right? At least, okay, maybe not for most of the people in this room, but that has been the custom certainly among many women, that Shabbat candles is the moment of Kabbalat Shabbat. It's the moment of acceptance of Shabbat, which elevates the lighting of the candles to having a strong ritual significance. So, what I want to do is by going back and looking a little bit at the Mishnah, and particularly looking at the Gemara, to seeing where, in fact, this might have come from. Where does this come from? Was this, in fact, there in the very beginning? All right, so let's take a look and do some learning together on these sources, which are double-sided and got spaced a little bit differently, but I think they're fine. All right, so I have for you first two Gemarot, but I want to skip down for a moment to the third and fourth source. Perhaps I should have put the third source first, since it's a Mishnah and not a Gemara, but when I put this one first, that's a hard way to start. So we'll talk about it first, but I won't have it face you straight up on the sheet. Okay, so those of you who have recited B'Mem Adliki, and those of you who have learned this chapter, those of you who perhaps like me were often the only female in shul Friday night, all alone on my side of the mezitzah, I certainly remember this Mishnah very, very clearly. Ashalosh aveirot nashim meitot b'shat leidatan. For three transgressions, women die in childbirth. Al she'enan zihirot b'nida u'b'chala u'b'hadlakat haner. For not being sufficiently meticulous in their observance of nida, the separation of chala, and the lighting of the candles. Okay, so a troubling Mishnah certainly seems to fit in with what we often see as the rabbinic notion that bad things happen as punishment, right? If women die in childbirth, then the assumption here seems to be that that's because they have done something wrong. That's not unique to this particular Mishnah. It's a type of theology that appears in many times in the Talmud. I'm assuming here that the association between dying and childbirth is that the things that women are not being zehirot in, that they're not being sufficiently meticulous in, are things that are generally associated with women. Nida, which relates to menstruation. Chala, which leads to an assumption about who is the one doing the baking in the kitchen. And hadlakat haner, lighting of candles, probably has to do with the person who is responsible for taking care of the household and making sure that there are candles that are lit. How do you read this hadlakat haner? What are we talking about here? What does this seem to be saying? Shabbos candles? Is it Shabbos candles? Yes, it's Shabbos candles. Okay, maybe it's Shabbos candles. Why do you think it's Shabbos candles? It's in Shabbat. Thank you. Okay. Yes, that's true. It's in B'Mem Adlikin. Okay. Folks, this is it. This is the mention. This and Hadliku Ataner are the only mentions of what you actually do with these candles. Okay? It's something that needs to be... Okay.
It's not necessarily a mitzvah, but it's...
Okay, so you're assuming that it's some sort of positive practice, some sort of ritual that one is required to do. Or it could be negative, right? So if it were negative, then what would be the negative that would be associated? Be careful with hadlakat haner. Don't light them too late, right? If you're lighting candles Friday night, or if you're turning on the lights Friday night, make sure that you do it before before Shkia, right? Before the time for Shabbat comes in. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, good. So that, in fact, is exactly my question, right? Which is there any reason to assume, or how strongly would we assume from this Mishnah that this is a ritual lighting of candles, as opposed to, it's a long time ago, there are no electric lights, there are no lights in the street, it's Friday night, we're about to have a su'udah, and unless someone lights something, it's going to be impossible for us to eat, for us to walk around, for us to do anything. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You may not want to argue it's a ritual.
Okay.
You have to argue some.
There's some sort of significance, unless it's as Saratova said before, which is that what you need to be careful about is making sure those lights, which on Thursday night you can light, there's no, you know, light them whenever you want, whenever it's convenient. If it's Friday night, make sure that you light them early enough. Okay, so that would be kind of the response to that. Yeah. Okay, guilt by association, right? So the other two on the list are definitely mitzvot, right? The observance of nidah and the separation of challah are mitzvot. So there is possibly an association with this list. Okay. There was another hand? Okay. All right. Great. That's what we have in the Mishnah. So I want to turn now to the two gemarot that we have here. And these are the two gemarot that talk about the lighting of Shabbat candles. As has already been pointed out, this chapter is, of course, the place where Hanukkah candles are discussed, the lighting of the Hanukkah lights, and certainly Daf Chaf Gimel, right? This is right smack in the middle of the discussion of the lighting of the Hanukkah candles, which, by the way, in the Gemara do have not just one bracha, have two or three brachot. That is actually, in fact, in the Gemara. So take a look at the first source. This is Talmud Bavli Shabbat, Chaf Gimel Amud Bet. Okay, and let's see if we can figure out or try to figure out what's going on here, particularly in terms of this question as of lighting as practical versus lighting as ritually significant. Amar Rava, Pshitali, Ner Beito V'Ner Chanukah Ner Beito Adif, Mishum Shlom Beito. So Rava is addressing here a question of someone who's poor and does not have a lot of money. Okay, they only have a little bit of money. And they are going to be able to use that money to buy something, but not everything that they need. So Rava says it's obvious to me that when it comes to the lights of the home versus the lights of Chanukah, the lights of the home are preferred, meaning that's what you're going to spend your money on, because of Shalom Beito, because of peace of the house. Ner Beito v'kiddush hayom, Ner Beito adif, mishum Shalom Beito. Similarly, if you can only get either lights for the home or wine for kiddush, lights of the home again take precedence because of shalom bayit, peace in the home. Bai Rava ner Chanukah v'kiddush hayom mahu. So Rava says, what about a conflict between spending the money to get oil to light a Chanukiah or wine to get kiddush? Kiddush hayom adif de tadir, o dilma ner Chanukah adif mishum persume nisa. Right here, Rava asks this question. It's not pshit to him. What takes precedence? Does the kiddush take precedence because this is a regularly practiced mitzvah every single week, or do the lights of Chanukah take precedence because of the idea of publicizing the miracle of Chanukah? Batar di bai hadar pashta, ner Chanukah adif mishum pirsumei nisa. And after Rava asked the question, he himself answered it and said, the lights of the Chanukah menorah get precedence because of the publicizing of the miracle. That's part one. Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna made the following statement. Haragil b'ner havyin le banim talmidei chachamim. One who is careful, one who is regular with the lights, will have children who are Torah scholars. Hazahir b'mezuzah, zocher l'dira na'ah. Someone who's meticulous in their observance of mezuzah will have a nice apartment. Okay, nice. It's a New York City translation. Hazahir b'tzitzit, zocher l'talit na'ah. Someone who is careful about the mitzvah of tzitzit will have beautiful garments. Hazahir b'kiddush hayom, zocher m'maleh gavayayin. And if you're careful about kiddush, then you'll have barrels and barrels full of wine. Okay. This is what we got, folks. Okay, this is the Gemara what the Gemara has on this amud, on this daf, that relates to the lighting of these candles. So what are the things, first of all, that we should kind of point to, particularly in light of what Lainey put out for us, right? Ritual versus practical. What are some of the things that sort of stand out? Yeah?
What happened to light and scholarly children?
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Okay,
so how would you read the others, and what does that make? Yes, right? The others seem to be a very classic kind of midah keneged midah, right? If you do the things that you're supposed to for your house, such as putting up a mezuzah, you'll have a nice house. If you wear a tzitzit, you'll have nice clothes. If you are careful about the candles, you'll have children who are scholarly, right? So clearly there's a message there that light, scholarship, Torah, right, are associated. Great, yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay.
So maybe these are like
hint, hint, right. That's great. Thank you. Yeah.
There's no mention of Shabbos on here?
No mention of Shabbos, right? What are the candles called? Ner Bayit. Household lights. Yeah. Can I add to that? Okay. All right.
Along the same trajectory, it seems that even though Ner Bayit is held up as being very important, the reason is Shlom Bayit, which is not a ritualist.
Yeah. Right? I mean, very much in contrast with Pirsumei Nisa or a mitzvah that's tadir, right? There's something that's going on here. There's something of significance, but doesn't sound like ritual significance, right? Ner Bayit sounds fairly prosaic. Shalom Bayit. What is Shalom Bayit? Other than what we call Shalom Bayit. So if you just take a look very quickly at Rashi, if Rashi says what seems to make a whole lot of sense. Right, take a look at page 2, to the top. Rashi, Shalom Beito. Okay, so we haven't gotten to the second part. V'hachi Amrinan L'kaman. Rashi is going to connect this to a pasuk that's quoted in the next Gemara that I'm going to show you. V'atiznach mishalom nafshi zo hadlakat ner b'shabbat. Okay, which requires further discussion, besides that it has hadlakat ner b'shabbat, which is interesting, which is not on this page, right? My soul was bereft of peace. What is peace? Peace refers to the lighting of the candles of Shabbat. Shebnei beito mitzdarin leshev b'choshech. The people of the household are going to be, troublesome, burdensome, awful, right? Uncomfortable to sit in the dark. Shalom Bayit is very prosaic. Shalom Bayit means if we don't have the lights on and it's pitch black outside, people are going to trip. People are going to be eating in the dark. It's not pleasant. Your whole Shabbat is going to be ruined because you don't have light. Shabbat afternoon, you'll be fine. Shabbat morning, you'll be fine. But Friday night is going to be a real problem. Okay. We should read the other, just to pick up on your point. Banim Talmidei Chachamim. Dichtiv, kiner mitzvah v'torah or, right? The pasuk that you would be most associated with this. Mitzvah is a candle, Torah is light. Al yidei ner mitzvah de Shabbat v'chanukah ba or de Torah. You can see Rashi's insertions here. Through the commanded light, we haven't seen that here, of Shabbat and of Chanukah comes the light of Torah. So I want to go back to that as well. Yes. Yeah.
And that I actually can't decide where it came from. The historical idea of the non-rabbinic sect, like Karaites, sort of legend that would rather sit in the dark and not like new coals on to be cooked or anything. I'm just wondering if there's any, of anything that would parallel that kind of idea of why this is such a strong. The idea of Shalom Bayit, that sitting in the dark, is a stronger concept.
Okay. Very nice. I think it's really important to be aware of that, right? Of that there might be also, or what might be part of sort of the prominence of or growing prominence of the idea of Shabbat candles might also be an anti-Karaite, an anti-Sadducee kind of polemic. A friend of mine who studies early Christian works pointed out that the Jews were often referred to as the lamplighters. So they are. There is this association, okay, which might, and that might very well be a piece of that. Right. So if the Karaites were the Sadducees were sitting in the dark and eating the cold cholent, right?
Yeah. Also going back to the mission is that particularly the rabbis will have very harsh punishment for this vote that happened to be kind of total opposite view of the other sects that are around at the time. So
okay. Or at least one of them. You're saying that that might be what's putting it on the list. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. Okay, great. Let's look at our other Gemara, and let's see if our other Gemara has a little bit more Shabbat-like direction or a little bit more ritual direction. This one, I think we've fleshed out what there is, and then we can take a look and think about what Rashi's doing with this. Okay, the Gemara here is addressing a machloket, a debate between Rabbi Yishmael and Chachamim. Rabbi Yishmael Omer ein madlikim beitran mifnei kavod Shabbat v'chachamim omrim b'chol hashmanim. Right, that Rabbi Yishmael said one should not use pitch or tar as a fuel source for your candles, for your lights for Shabbat, and Chachamim said it's okay, you can use any fuel source. So the Gemara here is exploring what is behind Rabbi Yishmael's statement. My Tama, right? What's the reason? Amar Rava, mitoch shereicho ra, gzeira shema yanichena v'yetze. So again, Rava comes along and he says, well, it smells terrible. And we're afraid lest you abandon ship, you leave the house, and you go out. Amar le Abaye, v'yetze. Abaye says, so who cares? There's no prohibition of walking outside your house on Shabbat, of leaving your house. What's the problem? Amar le, sha'ani omer hadlakat ner b'shabbat chova. Okay, and this is really the first instance that we have of something this direct. For I say, says Rava, that the lighting of the candles for Shabbat is chova, is an obligation. Damar of Nachman bar Rav Zvida v'amri le'amar of Nachman bar Rava amar Rav hadlakat ner b'Shabbat chova v'chitzat yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin arvit u'shut v'ani omer mitzvah. Okay, so he quotes Rav Nachman bar Zvida, Rav Nachman bar Rav, in the name of Rav, that the lighting of the candles for Shabbat is a chovah, is an obligation, and the washing of one's hands and feet in warm water the evening before is reshut, is optional. And I say it is a mitzvah. My mitzvah, what is the mitzvah? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, kach haya min hago shel Rav Yehuda bar Ilai. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, so the following was the custom of Rav Yehuda bar Ilai. Erev Shabbat mevin lo areva melea chamin v'rochetz panav yadav v'raglav u'mitatef yoshef v'sadinim hamatsuyatzin v'dome l'malach Hashem Tzvaot. Right? On Erev Shabbat, they would bring him a basin full of warm water. He would wash his face, hands, and feet. And then he would drape himself in a four-cornered garment of that had tzitzit, and he looked like an angel of God. Okay? So that's the story associated with the idea that the washing is reshut or mitzvah, and the story does not illustrate the hadlakat ner b'shabbat chovah, that the lighting of the candles is an obligation. Later on, the Gemara, in the same Gemara, we have the pasuk that we saw in Rashi. It comes from here. Vatiznach mishalom nafshi nashiti tova. Mai vatiznach mishalom nafshi amar Rabbi Avahu zo hadlakat ner b'shabbat. Right? My soul was bereft of peace. I forgot prosperity. What is the peace that is being referred to in the pasuk? Rabbi Avahu says this is the lighting of the candles for Shabbat. Okay. So we have now a move from Ner Beito to some sort of Ner Shabbat, some notion that there is a light of Shabbat. Does that get us all the way there to what we do today? So a lot of the discussion will hinge upon how we read one particular word in this entire Gemara, which is the word of Chovah. Okay? How do we understand obligation? So what are our options? One's fairly clear, right? One's a ritual obligation. Chovah means a mitzvah, right? Synonymous with mitzvah, something you're required to do. Comes Friday night, you got to light the candles. That would be a mitzvah obligation. Okay, what are the other possibilities?
A familial obligation.
Okay, so it needs to happen because it needs to happen. It practically needs to happen. Yeah. Okay. Actually, that's going to come close to. So that would be something like. I mean, one of the examples that they're going to use in terms of trying to discuss what this chovah is sakana, something that's necessary because of a health reason or something like that. Okay, so we can have, and that's going to be the discussion. Does obligation perforce mean mitzvah? Did this Gemara right here just turn Shabbat candles into an obligation, into a mitzvah, rather than something that we can see as necessary and practical, but not necessarily ritualized in this kind of way? Yeah?
Don't we see later, though, that the Gemara refers to Hatzner Shabbat as a Chovah and Rechit Satyadai, the Raglai, the Arabit, as Mitzvah?
Okay, so that's important, right? If we're going to talk about what's the terminology here, right, the word Mitzvah actually got attached to the Rechit Satyadai. The showering, okay? That's the ancient equivalent of taking a shower, okay? So, is taking a shower a mitzvah before Shabbat? Okay, yes, we all agree it's a mitzvah, okay? It's certainly a mitzvah for someone else to take a shower, right? Okay. We don't say a bracha. I think we're fairly clear on that. I mean, the truth of the matter is that we should probably extend this discussion a little bit and think not just about the biblical mitzvot of Shabbat, but we have certain rabbinic mitzvot of Shabbat, right? We have Kavod Shabbat, Oneg Shabbat, which involve things like, let's see, Kavod Shabbat generally involves things that you do before Shabbat in order to honor the Shabbat when it comes in. So, for example, showering, right? Making your bed, that's one of my favorites, yeah? Cooking, right? Having candles set out on the table so that you can see, right? All of those could fit in, or do fit in, certainly come in the Rambam's list of examples of Kavod Shabbat. What about Oneg Shabbat? So Oneg Shabbat is the things that you do on Shabbat to make your Shabbat pleasurable. Taking a nap, right? Yeah, that's a big one, okay? Good meals, okay? Perhaps eating your meals where it's light. I don't know, maybe, right? So there are things that fit into the rabbinic categories of the rabbinic mitzvot of Shabbat, and one can certainly imagine lighting the Shabbat candles going in there. Interesting, though, still, your point that the word mitzvah is available, right? And it's not being used, right? The word chovah is being used instead. How should we understand that? Yeah, Tila.
Two questions.
Yes. Okay,
that,
good.
That
correct, okay.
Something else.
So, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Right, that may be chovah is actually the stronger word.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Certainly, by the way, if you associate it with reshut, right? Which is, it moves from, and I call it, they called it a reshut, and I call it a mitzvah. You can still see those as associated, meaning you don't have to do it. It's a nice thing. It's a good thing. It's a fantastic thing. Yeah.
And the other thing is that I don't understand how answers.
Okay.
If all I need to do is light the candle.
Right.
And lighting the candle, leaving the room, I did.
You already did the lighting. Okay. Correct, okay, or having candles lit. And the truth is, I mean, I think this also, by the way, points us to the fact that one of the things that's going on in the back of our heads as we look at all of this is Ner Chanukah, right? And in which ways is Ner Shabbat following Ner Chanukah, and which ways is it differing? Is it Hanachah Ose Mitzvah, right? Is there a mitzvah of lighting the candles, or is there a mitzvah or a chovah or whatever it is of having there be light? Those might be two very different associations. And I'll give you what I think is sort of the best example of this, although a little bit it's giving away the game. Think about how we light Shabbat candles. Okay, we'll think about how I light Shabbat candles, okay? So here I am, my living room and dining room are kind of attached, right? There are electric lights on all over, and near the window, there's a little side thing, and I have like four candlesticks there, and I go and I light them and I do the whole thing, right? They're not providing light in my house, okay? If I didn't have the electric lights on, those candles, it would be pretty dark if I turned off all the lights. So I think that's something to think about. You know, what is it? Is it the lighting of those candles, which is when I said the bracha, or is it the fact, or really are my Shabbat candles, in fact, actually all the electric lights in the room? Just by the way, if we go out Friday night, I actually don't like candles because I know too many people have had fires, and I will actually go up and flick on my electric lights and say, Asher Kedusha Mitzvotavetivan Lahalik Nir Shal Shabbat over my electric lights because I've just illuminated the room. So that's kind of the thing, even though they might not be as pretty as my little candlesticks. I'm just going to, want to make sure that we get to our time. Okay, so those are some of the things that I think we should be thinking about, exactly what chovah means, exactly what is the hadlakah that we're talking about, and you're right, of course, right? If it's just to light, the yetzeh doesn't take away from you lighting. Much more significant, right?
No, but like, it's not a ritual act.
Okay. Ah, so that's another interesting question. Okay, good. Okay, excellent. Okay, good. And that, in fact, those are exactly the issues that this is going to kind of come down to. And one of the things that I want us to think about is not just thinking about how to read this Gemara, but if there has been a jump, to kind of notice that and notice how things have kind of progressed forward and what that might be about. Okay, so okay, so we saw Rashi. I'll just kind of bring it back to our minds again. Rashi did a number of things. One is Rashi referred to this ner, even when he was on Chaf Kimel Amud Bet, as a ner mitzvah and a ner of Shabbat. The Rashi that's important for us to look at that we haven't looked at is the one on 25b Chaf Hei Amud Bet. On the word chovah, Rashi says, kavod shabbatu. What obligation? The rabbinic obligation of honoring the Shabbat, right? The rabbinic mitzvah. She'ein se'uda chashuva ele b'makom or ke'en yimama perek batra diyoma. Why? Because a festive meal is not festive, is not significant, unless it's in a very well-lit location. Okay, so the lighting of the candles or the existence of having light is a kiyum of kavod Shabbat, accomplishes this idea of honoring the Shabbat, which can only be done if you're eating your Shabbat meal in a place that is well lit. Okay. Yeah. Right, I'm not necessarily assuming that it's, you know, sort of a one candle, two candle versus how many kids are there in the house candles, right? That we're probably talking about having a number of lamps. One of the things that does come up is whether the focus of where the light needs to be is connected to the su'udah or whether it's about not tripping in the dark. And if you think about some of our halachic practices, that comes down to also a question of lighting where you sleep versus lighting where you're eating, right? So that kind of tension is still being held onto. Okay, so what's left for us to do is Tosafot, and the Tosafot, as we'll see, in fact, really develops or is really in some ways a condensation of this discussion that I referred to earlier that takes place between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Meshulam. I think what I would like to do is to look at it first in the Tosafot and to try to get some of the, make sure we're clear on some of these ideas and some of the texts that are going on there, and then spend some time taking a look at the discussion between the two of them and some of the polemics that go back and forth. I actually brought down two Tosafots here for you. One is very much, we'll see. The Hadlakat Ner B'Shabbat Chovah. Okay, so these Tosfot are on the second Gemara that we saw. Perush b'makom suda. Rashi says that what the Gemara is referring to over there, the discussion or the argument between Abaye and Rava, is only in reference to lights where you are eating. D'chovahu sheyisod b'makom haner mishum oneg. Like Rashi, but one shade difference, right? There's an obligation to eat in a place that's lit, and he says that that is not Kavod Shabbat, that's Oneg Shabbat, okay? Taking place on Shabbat itself, it enhances your enjoyment, presumably, of your meal. Aval mehadlakat ner gufe lo hava parich Abaye. But says Tosfot, Abaye never asked and never would ask about having light in the home. Dipshita dechovahi. Because obviously that would be obligatory. Dehatanan al shalosh averot nashim v'chulei al she'enan zihirot v'adlakat haner. And here Tosfot refers back to the Mishnah and says, well, what the Mishnah is clearly indicating to us is there's some sort of obligation of lighting candles Friday night. That's why you die in childbirth if you haven't been sufficiently meticulous. That is accepted by everyone, says Tosafot. The only discussion between Abaye and Rava is there an additional obligation to also specifically have light in the place where you're eating? Okay. Tell me if you're convinced by that. V8 say, right, you're going to leave your house. I'm not sure now we have to translate into kind of you'll leave your house because your meal isn't sufficiently lit, even though you can... Your house is lit, but your meal isn't sufficiently lit. But Tosfot is clearly bothered by this notion that there would be a disagreement as to whether the Shabbat candles are obligatory. Clearly, they're obligatory. And if you want a source, go back and look at that particular Mishnah. Yeah. Okay, so that's another good question, right? Because when something is not a chovah, we have two possibilities, which is something could be optional, or something could be not required at all. I'm assuming the way he's reading the Gemara, when Abaye says v'yetzei, that assumes that you don't have to do it at all. But he has very much limited the scope of the argument, almost to the point where it's very hard to actually see the argument that it's about this sort of additional, there's some sort of an additional obligation. But this seems to be very seriously influenced by the sense that there is a absolute consensus that obviously there's a notion of hadlakat ner, of lighting lights in the home. Yeah?
Isn't Abaye saying it could even be a smelly light rather than it should?
Well,
it's true.
In other words, where the discussion goes back to is, why would Chachamim object, or why would Rabbi Yishmael object to the using of tar, right, as a fuel source? And Rava says, well, it's obvious, right? It's going to ruin you're going to leave your house, and you're not going to have, well, you're going to leave your house. And Abaye says, why is it a problem if you leave your house? I don't think he's saying, it's not so much about the smelly house, it's about what are the implications of having, what do those lights mean, okay? I mean, Chachamim, in any event, are going to permit, right? Because the point is to have light. I suppose if you leave, then we still have a problem. But right, I hear your point, which is that's originally what the debate is about. Yeah.
Do you see that in the text, right? It seems v'yinichena seems, I hear what you're saying, which is that it could be that there's a problem, we don't want you leaving. That doesn't translate well into this kind of you're saying leaving is a danger and therefore you need to light lights in the house so you can stay.
I mean, I'm just thinking Rava is very concerned about people at night, the valence of a lot of this argument,
okay, so I hear that. I personally would want to be Rava and Abaye appear a lot. I'm not sure that I want to necessarily associate him with one position, but I'm happy to put it on the table. Okay?
All I'm saying is there's an established
is dangerous. Okay. So it's dangerous, so you need to have the lights. And it's really, so then you're kind of, so you're keeping up with this kind of very practical type of concern. Or you're saying it's even more than practical. It's actually a... Okay. Okay. Particularly, okay, gotcha, gotcha. Okay. Hadn't thought about it, so I'll have to mull that over. Okay. Interesting. Okay, so we'll move into the realm of sakana right now under the second Tosfot, which is about chovah. So this is what Tosfot has to say, and we're going to try and pick apart these voices a little bit later. L'gabei rechitzat yadayim b'chamin karile chovah d'lo have kokach mitzvah. Umayim achronim karile chovah mishum sakana d'melech sdomit v'shahargo nefesh v'chamirei tvei min harishonim. So why is it called chovah? The lighting of Shabbat candles is called chovah or obligation when contrasted with the lesser mitzvah of washing in warm water before Shabbat. Similarly, Mayim Achronim, right, the washing of the hands after you finish eating, before Birkat HaMazon, is also referred to as Chovah, because this was done in order to avoid the danger of this Melech Sodomit, which could kill you, and it's taken very, very seriously, even more seriously than Netilat Yadayim before you eat. Okay? Got it. Okay. V'yesh Sherotzim Lomar, So Tosfot says, there are those, we'll find out who those are in a moment, there are those who want to say that because we refer to the lighting of these candles as chovah, they do not have a bracha. Similarly to mayim achronim, which the Gemara tells us explicitly, does not have a bracha. The Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Vishibushu, Rabbeinu Tam says this is a mistake. Delo dami l'mayim achronim, delo have ela l'hatzala ba'alma. Okay, he says, nah, they're not comparable to mayim achronim. All of a sudden something that became yishum sakana and killing you becomes, yes, merely for health reasons. Aval halakat ner, hi chovah shel mitzvat onek Shabbat. But lighting these candles are obligatory because of the mitzvah of onek Shabbat. The kamachovotain detunin bracha. Okay? And many obligations do require a bracha. So just because we use the word chovah does not mean that you don't make a bracha. Either possibility is available. This is how I choose. It's a ritual obligation and not a practical or life-based obligation. Umash omer tamacher shalol varech. And this person, whoever he is, brought another reason not to make a bracha. Mishum sh'im hayta mudleket ve'omedet lo haya tzarich l'chabota v'lachzor v'lahadlika v'lo l'hadlik acheret. The second argument is that one does not make a bracha because if the lights were already lit, right? You come home and your living room and dining room lights are on, there is no need to extinguish the lights and relight them specifically for Shabbat or to light an additional light. Hey, Nira, nope, I'm not buying that. Why? Daha gabe kisui hadam in kisau haruach patur milchasoto afilu hachi kishemechase tzarich levarich. And he argues by analogy, right? Common, well-founded practice, right? That when it comes to the mitzvah of covering the blood, when you slaughter a deer or a bird, you have to cover the blood. If the blood gets covered automatically, there's a wind that comes and sweeps up some dirt and the blood gets covered, you do not have to go and actively cover the blood. Nevertheless, if one does actively cover the blood, one makes a bracha, right? So in other words, just because something is not required to be done actively, it can be accomplished passively. That doesn't mean if you do it actively, it's not a ritual act that requires a bracha. Example number two, v'chein nolan mahul. Similarly, if a baby boy is born without foreskin, ikalamanda amar dein tzarich lahatif mimenu dambrit, ukeshamal tanya b'shili perak rabbi Eliezer demila, hamal omer v'chulei. Similarly, there are those who say that if a baby boy is born without foreskin, there is no need to do anything, not even to take a drop of blood. Nevertheless, when one does perform a circumcision, one, in fact, makes a bracha, and the bracha is here in the Talmud. Okay. Moving on to the next, to page 3. Uvasidur Rav Amram, Yesh hamadlik ner b'shabbat merorech asher kedushanu. Right? And argument number 3, if you look at the sidur of Rav Amram Gaon, he cites a bracha. Asher kedushanu tzaltav tzivanu halik ner shel shabbat. V'onirel Rabbeinu Tam, and now Rabbeinu Tam comes back to respond to the second argument. Shim haya haner mudlak v'omeid, shetzarich l'chabot v'lachzor l'hadlik. He says, no, actually, if the lights were already lit, you actually need to extinguish them and to go back and relight them. Because there's a statement later on in the Gemara, actually, Ram Avital brought this up in the shiur she gave at the Shabbaton, right? That if someone... this woman was lighting. What was she doing? She was lighting it too late, and he came and he yelled, right? And it's all coming back, and then she came back and she lit them too early. And this wise person said to her, "No, got to light the candles on. The trick is to get it done on time, right? Not too early and not too late. Too early means if my lights were on in my house at 2:00 in the afternoon, that's not Shabbos candles, right? I have to go and I have to." Extinguish them or light some additional Shabbos candles. Okay, so this is Rabbeinu Tam's. These are the basic arguments. What I want to do is, if we take a look in Rabbeinu Tam's Sefer Hayashar, this is the Sefer Hayashar, which is the collection of responsa that Rabbeinu Tam. And in many of the responsa, one of the things that sometimes happens in responses, you only get to see the answer and not the question. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a correspondence here between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Meshulam. At least we have some of the correspondence, right? How reliable it is, that's something that you have to think about. But they corresponded. This is a series of simanim, a series of sections in this set of responsa, in which they're corresponding on a whole number of issues, among which probably 5 or 6 of them, among which is this question, is the burning question of, should there be a bracha on Shabbat candles or not? Okay, so we're assuming we're now in the middle of the 1100s, and this is a burning debate. Rabbeinu Tam from France is saying, absolutely, you must make a bracha over lighting Shabbat candles. If you don't make a bracha, well, we'll see what he has to say about people who don't make a bracha or think you don't make a bracha over Shabbat candles. And Rabbeinu Meshulam, who's equally vociferous about his position, which is it's absolutely wrong to light Shabbos candles, to make a bracha on Shabbos candles. And obviously, we know who won the day on this one, which I think is something that's also worthy of discussion here. So the first one we hear from is Rabbeinu Tam was actually responding. Tshuvat Rabbeinu Tam neged Rabbeinu Meshulam. Okay, Rabbeinu Tam's response versus Rabbeinu Meshulam. Gam shamati she'akru birchat ner b'shabbat. I have heard that they have uprooted the blessing on the candles of Shabbat. V'chilulu hamikdash v'chibat hamitzvah. Okay, this is pretty strong terminology, right? They desecrated the sanctuary and the cherishing the love for this mitzvah. Okay, and now he makes the argument that we've seen before. Ki kama chovotu nol brachad v'lo v'eino domeh l'mayim achronim. He makes the kind of argument we've seen already, which is, don't tell me that because it's a chovah, it doesn't require a bracha. After all, there are many chovot that do require a bracha, which is the point one that we saw before. And then he also brings down Sidur of Amram Gaon, in which he says that there is a mitzvah to light the Shabbat candles, and it is accompanied by a bracha. Okay, and in fact, Rabbeinu Tam makes the point, which is, I think, a fair point, which is that not all the brachot appear in the Talmud, right? If you're going to use the Talmud as your only source of brachot, you're going to be missing quite a number of them, okay? So he says it is completely fair and consistent and okay to use a gaonic source as the source of a bracha. Just because it's not recorded in the Talmud doesn't mean that the bracha is not appropriate and proper. Okay, so that is kind of the first... the first laying out, the first thing that gets set up in the argument. To which Rabbeinu Meshulam responds, if you take a look at the next paragraph, where Rabbeinu Meshulam responds very briefly, "Uberkat ner kemo ken horehu v'noheg tchila v'chein b'mekomot achirim harbei ra'inu she'ino agin levarech." He essentially says, Rabbeinu Tam, that's very nice. You say that there is, that one makes a bracha. Go ahead. You know, I'm happy if you say that, but that is not a universal by any stretch. V'tama d'mistaber she'ein hadlakata gemar mitzvata v'eina ela kedei la'ir balayla. And his main argument here is again what we said before, which is the other hand. There's nothing ritually significant about the lighting of these candles. It is not gemar mitzvah. It is not some sort of ritual act. It's simply there to make sure that we're not sitting in the dark and eating in the dark, and therefore there's no reason to give it to say a bracha over it. That's his response. Okay, and I'm forgetting my page here. Okay. Okay, fine. These always get stapled backwards. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam is not happy. Okay, and in his final response on the subject, he hits home pretty hard. Okay, so point number one is more of a technical point. He's arguing against him saying that it's not gemar mitzvah. Uma shekatavta shegam hore b'ner shabbat shelo levarech u'mistaber tama she'ena gemar mitzvata haleta shegemar mitzvata hi kener chanukah lefursumei nisahi v'hachinami midahava shalom beito de'en lo lahakdim v'lo lacher. He says, first of all, let's use the Chanukah candles as a model. Okay? If you think about the Chanukah candles, there's two ways of thinking about them, right? There's the act of lighting the Chanukah candles, and there's also the act of pirsumei nisa that occurs when the candles are lit. Even though at the moment you're lighting them, it's not, you're sort of enabling the pirsumei nisa, nevertheless, we don't say you don't make a bracha in the act of kindling because the mitzvah has not yet gone into full effect. Similarly with Shabbat candles, again, using this as its model, similarly with the Shabbat candles, even though the Shalom Bayit that you're going to accomplish is later on, Shalom Bayit really should be understood as very similar to Pirsumei Nisa. It is a worthy and lofty type of thing to create, and therefore the act of kindling itself can also have a bracha. And now he really hits him for not following what he thinks is the bracha in the Geonim, which is you're going to quote the Geonim when it's convenient for you. Sometimes you rely on the Geonim, and sometimes the fact that it's not in the Talmud is a problem for you. That doesn't seem to be particularly fair. And Have Pikeach, he says after the period here, Have Pikeach v'shtok, be smart and be quiet. And they won't laugh at you. And also the angels won't punish you. I think that might be a reference to those angels that are walking you home, right? So what are you doing here? This is big stuff you're dealing with. And now he says, this I think is really, really interesting. The reason why you don't know about the bracha for lighting candles is because the women say it. You're not around, right? You just haven't heard it. Maybe they whisper it. Maybe it's being said silently. Maybe you're not home. That's why you think there's no bracha, and I made it up. I didn't make it up, right? Go ask your mother, right? That's really what he's saying. Shigamani lo shamati miyamai. The truth is, I never heard the bracha either. Upamim shayiti madlik hayiti shocheach. And sometimes when I had to light Shabbos candles, I wouldn't do it because I don't do it regularly, like the women in my family do. Fine. And then, just to sort of finish up with the women, right, and then he says, I'm sorry, over here, he says, V'od raya lebracha sheken katav v'ilchol gedolot hamalik ner chanukah v'ner shabbat chila madlik ner chanukah di adlik shabbat b'resha itzar le michlal shehu mevarech shim ein bracha kabbalah minayin. And he says, and I can bring another proof for you, that there's a bracha because the Halachot Gedolot wrote that in terms of the order of which one lights first, the Shabbat candles or the Hanukkah candles, when it's Shabbat Hanukkah, one lights the Hanukkah candles first because when one lights the Shabbat candles, it's forbidden to light the Hanukkah candles because you have accepted the Shabbat. And here comes the move, right? And clearly, if you've accepted the Shabbat, you've made a bracha, right? Because the acceptance of Shabbat is ritually significant, so there must be something ritually significant about this act. The point, I think, again and again and again, is it's one could clearly argue both ways here, right? Rabbeinu Meshulam is arguing there is nothing ritually significant about lighting Shabbat candles. I'm not saying that you don't light the candles. I'm saying that we light candles, but it's no different than Thursday night. The only difference is we need to make sure that the room is well lit so that people can eat and that people can enjoy their meals. People aren't tripping over each other. That's a bad idea. That's the Shalom Bayit. That's what the whole Gemara is about. It's about the absolute, you know, prosaically necessary reason to light to have these candles lit. There is nothing here that would signify having a bracha recited over them. That makes it a ritual act, and it is not a ritual act. It is a practical act. It's a significant act, but there's nothing ritualistic about it. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam, and perhaps Rabbeinu Tam here, I'm trying to sort of figure out how much Rabbeinu Tam is arguing sort of, like, in other words, how much is Rabbeinu Tam, when he's making the argument for saying that the lighting of the candles is ritually significant, is he trying to base it on something earlier to give it more authority? And how much is he aware that perhaps what he's saying is, in fact, not necessarily accepted throughout, right? But this is a moment, but there's something here that has created a change in the act of lighting candles, that it should be recognized as ritually significant, and once that kind of that stuff is already out there, like, all that's needed is kind of one more push in order to make it ritually significant. And therefore, a bracha is either already earned or will tip the scale to the next step so that the lighting of Shabbat candles becomes a ritually significant act about Kabbalat Shabbat and becomes, and of course, for a, you know, the kind of the proof is in the pudding, which is Rabbeinu Tam. What's being seen here is something that was clearly necessary on some level, or people wanted it on some level because that's what happened, right? It became a ritual. It became a highly significant ritual. It became a ritual with a bracha, with a whole ceremony around it. We could talk about whether you do or don't. People cover their hair for lighting candles, or they don't cover their hair for anything else. There's a whole waving thing that's going on, right? I mean, there's stuff to the lighting of the Shabbat candles that feels very religiously significant and important. And even if that wasn't the case at the beginning, something has happened here. Something has happened that recognition is on some level demanded. Just to look at the final paragraph of what Rabbeinu Tam says. This is, again, arguing on one of these points, which is the question of whether you need to actually relight candles that have already, or lamps that have already been lit. Right? You, Rabbeinu Meshulam, argue that if the lights are lit, you don't extinguish them and relight. Right? Big deal. Halo b'kisui adam v'nechaseh baruch patur milchasot, the argument we saw already. V'im chazar v'nitgaleh chayav, v'chein b'sukah ha'omedet v'asuya, v'eni yachol l'chadesh badavar, enu mevarech in yasena. V'im yichadesh badavar, bracha hanoheget ba, right? There's a bracha about making the sukkah, which is bracha of shechiyanu. Oh, here's the point that I wanted to get to. She'nashim shelanu minhag b'yadam l'chavot el hadlik, right? Our women have the custom of extinguishing and relighting the candles. Vani ra'iti b'einai, and I saw that with my own eyes. Ve'eshalim, I asked them. Write that down as a very significant moment. The Tomana came and they told me, yep, that's what we do. V'meina neviyot b'nei neviyot hein, right? And this is a line that often comes up as a way of telling us that the practice that's done by the people is a good and noble practice. If they are not prophets, they're at least daughters of prophets, right? So therefore, I ask the women, this is what the women do. If the women do this, then that is what we do, right? If the women give this ritual significance, if they specifically want to light those lights, right, those candlesticks, not these, right? If they want to light those candlesticks before Shabbat, That is significant. That is ritually significant. That is worthy of a bracha. That is a moment of the acceptance of Shabbat. And that is Rabbeinu Tam's argument, which I think has won the day. And I think, you know, in the thing to kind of think about, or what are the implications, right? What are the implications in terms of thinking about ritual, thinking about innovation, thinking about the difference between innovation that feels like it comes in, you know, innovation that feels founded on something that's already there, right? That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam makes this argument. I can read it into this text. It's there. Ask the women. People have been doing it for hundreds of years. You just don't know because you're, you know, you're too busy being off in shul, right? You're missing it, but it's there already, right? That's often the way that, you know, that's often a good tactic for making an argument for change, right? For saying that this is something that's, you know, it's just, it's bubbling up already. It's already here. All we have to do is, you know, is just bring it to the next step. It's there, right? And once we mark it, then it has the possibility of becoming something significant and longstanding and that goes across communities, right? Ashkenazim, Sephardim, everyone lights Shabbat candles. Everyone makes a bracha over lighting Shabbat candles. It's pretty amazing. That, I think, is the power of this particular approach of Rabbeinu Tam. Happy to take questions or... Thank you. Yes?
Can I ask a historic question?
Good try.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking on the first page with the Mishnah and then with the Mishnah that seems to be something with lighting candles
yeah.
with women... And then jumping into Bavli 25b.
Yep.
And it says that kindling the light for Shabbat is obligatory. And
yep.
I'm just curious of the like, do we know at what point is kindling sort of a women focused thing? And like,
yes, so that's another whole shiur on the association, which I can leave in very capable hands here if you want to take up the challenge. The association between women and lighting candles. Not all of which is positive, much of which is quite negative. In fact, I think I skipped over a line there about women extinguishing the light of the world and therefore needing to light candles. Yeah. What? One woman, I know. And we're going to be paying forever. Right. that's what happens when you're a prototype. I mean, it's just... So that is definitely there. I think it's interesting that it's not here in the Gemara at all, right? It's in that Mishnah, but there isn't any sense that there's some sort of obligation here, but you definitely have a great deal of Midrashic association, and then you have a claiming of that ritual by women, for themselves, which is also interesting. There's sort of a counter narrative to the women extinguishing the light of the world that comes in some of the later tchinot, where the woman is being seen as Aharon HaKohen, the high priest, lighting the menorah, right? That's a good one, right? That actually really addresses, I think, and picks up on that whole association of light, and we certainly have enough room for doing that. Yeah? Yeah. That's nice. The place where I remember this from is in a discussion in Masechet Pesachim, where there's a whole Erev Pesach falls on Shabbat. It doesn't this year, right? So Erev Pesach falls on Shabbat, and they forgot what do you do with the Korban Pesach on Shabbat? And the question is asked of Hillel. There's a whole story there, and he says, I forgot the halacha, but look at the people. If they're not prophets, they're children of prophets. And they watch what the people do, and the next day they see that anyone who didn't bring a knife with them, like had stuck it into the wool of the sheep, which is not a very pleasant matter, but it kind of took care of the Shabbat problem. So that's a line that gets used, and it's often used about sort of the integrity and the piety of the people. So that's what he's saying here, but I that whole sort of, that deserves, that is really worthy of a whole discussion, this question of
do they or do they not know what the women are doing? The fact that Rabbeinu Tam actually asks someone, which is, you know, amazing, but to some extent also amazing because we don't necessarily see that so often. So clearly here we see a strong indication this is already a practice of women. And in fact, you know, the fact that he is using that as an argument to make for ritualizing it and giving it a bracha is really, really powerful. You know, and he didn't kind of put it on the side because of that, that became something very significant. I saw one, another hand. Yeah. Hi, Molly.
Mm-hmm. It might be more important to really have a verbal affirmation that you're doing it before Shabbat.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, very nice, right? In other words, it's the prosaicness of this that actually can lead to the need to ritualize it and to signify that there's something different going on. In fact, you know, I'm also just thinking about that might also be a really good reminder about making sure you light them early enough. Like that actually might have some real practical value, right? Oh, wait, there's this thing, I have to light candles, right? By a certain time, right? That kind of also can feed into that. Yeah?
It's amazing that something which is the subject of the debate as to whether it even is a ritual, mm-hmm. becomes not only a ritual, but at least in American Judaism, the ritual by which mm-hmm. various populations, mm-hmm. Asian populations, mm-hmm. for decades,
Yep. Yeah. I think that's incredible. Right. I mean, I think that's right. Incredibly significant that candle lighting becomes, you know, is one of the main, you know, sort of a, you know, do you do something related to Shabbat? Do you light candles? Right. That's the one. Right. So very, very powerful. Yeah, very powerful. Yeah. I see people want to respond. I mean, I would just say that I think that it's a home mitzvah is I think the significance, right? As opposed to a public one, you know. Well, granted that was clearly those two were associated, but and therefore it's sort of hard to. But I would sort of focus on the home aspect that's what gives it its power and its staying power. Yeah. Nope. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
If you look at sociological studies of immigrants, mm-hmm. home-based rituals usually done by women mm-hmm. Are maintained much larger, just like food habits are.
Mm. Okay.
That's a public thing. So when you look at acculturation and adaptation across immigrant groups, but this is primarily American and European.
Okay.
That's what is maintained generationally.
That's great.
I will also add one little bit about
please.
About Kiyomis versus Kiddushi, if you're talking about an actually religious population, in much shorter ritual time. Grammatically, if you're
right.
not fluent religious.
Correct. No, think about that. That's true. And especially a bracha, right, which there are enough of those.
Bracha,
yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. Thank you. That's an excellent point. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just because they're linked in the sense that they're a similar act, but right. also very, I mean, there's a specification of what the candle is, and
right.
the bracha is different, but the idea that, I'm just curious if at any point
right.
you're talking about the bookend aspect of this.
Yeah. Yeah, all the people who studied the 10th chapter of Pesachim are smiling, because there are bracha for the light in the Gemara, for Havdalah. Yeah, there is, right? So that's really interesting that we have a bracha at that end. We don't have a bracha on the prior end. So the back end is pushing the front end, perhaps?
Well, yeah, I'm familiar with that, but it's also, mm-hmm. it's also the language of that bracha. Mm-hmm. You're talking, it isn't emphasizing the candle, although eventually
right.
the specifications of the candle.
Correct.
The bracha emphasizes the fire
correct.
aspect.
Correct, right.
four. Plus, it doesn't have Asher HaKadoshanu, right? I mean, it's a very, very different kind of bracha. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I don't have an answer for you, but good to think about. All right. All right. Thank you very much, Yashar Koach. Everyone have Purim Sameach.
Speaking of holidays and fast days and